Can you picture it? Who knows how long he lay there unconscious and vulnerable and dying? Who knows how many people had passed right by him, intent on their business, and not even noticed him lying there? Who knows how long he would have lain there before he finally expired alone? Can you picture the one who saw him? Different religion, different homeland, their people sharing a mutual distrust that lasted generations. Can you picture the man being picked up and carried to safety? And can you picture what happened then? The time was the middle 1870s. The place, Sheboygan County, Wisconsin. Professor H. Kurtz, Doctor of Divinity, had walked 12 miles to preach to a new gathering of German immigrants. He began the 12-mile walk back to his home at Mission House College in Plymouth in the middle of a Wisconsin snowstorm. Partway there, he began to feel tired, and he did just the thing you should never do if you feel tired in a snowstorm. He sat down to rest. Sometime later, two Winnebago Indians came upon the stranger lying there asleep and already partially covered by the falling snow and already in very real danger of freezing to death. They picked him up and they carried him on their own backs to where they knew his home must be at Mission House College. He survived. Does this story sound familiar to you? When he recovered, Reverend Professor Kurtz vowed in gratitude that he would do everything he could to help the Winnebago. He advocated for a missionary to be sent to that people. Money was raised and one was sent. A church and a school were built. Eventually, Mission House College would split and become two new institutions, Lakeland College and the United Church of Christ's United Theological Seminary, two institutions that are still going strong. The grandson of the chief that first welcomed the missionaries and their help, that grandson would eventually become a national leader in the United Church of Christ, the Reverend Mitchell White Rabbit. The history of our church's missions to and later partnerships with the Native American tribes of this country is long, and it is varied, and it is checkered. In a little less than a week, Old South will send 12 people to northwestern New Mexico, to the Navajo Nation. There we will meet up with a group from another church, and together we will be of service wherever we can. You, the members and friends of Old South Church, have been contributing money over the last months for this effort, and the Mount Vernon Church, our sister congregation, has given a large sum in support of it as well. All of which is to say this: Old South is once again sending missionaries to the Native Americans. And since the churches of our tradition have often gotten it wrong in this regard, but sometimes gotten it right, I thought today would be a good day to see if us missionaries and you who are sending us have anything to learn from our history. The English word mission and the word missionaries comes from the Latin word missio, which means ascending or a dispatching. Just before today's story in Luke, Jesus himself had sent missionaries out into the world to, the story says, tell the people about the realm of God and to heal. Ever since those first days, followers of Jesus have gathered resources to send some among them out into the world to do missions. Paul was sent out not only to tell about Jesus, but to gather money to support those in need in the early Jesus movement. Centuries later, at the end of the Middle Ages, Christian Europe came once again into frequent contact with a wider world with which it had lost touch. At this time, Christian Europe came into touch with people who believed things different from what they believed. At this time, Christian Europe came into contact with powerful people who worshipped other gods, who believed different things, and Christian Europe had to come to terms with it. Here's how Christian Europe came to terms with it. They began sending out missionaries. It was at this time that Christian mission came to be largely equated with Christian evangelization and proselytization. Though they also often founded hospitals, schools, and other good institutions, for several hundred years, a Christian missionary was always somebody sent out by the church to convert and to civilize what they thought of as the heathen. The history of our forebears' mission to Native Americans starts with exactly that attitude. The 1629 Charter of the Massachusetts Bay Colony states that a part of its mission was, quote, to win and invite the natives to the only God and Savior of mankind, end quote. The first seal of the colony depicted a Native American with a word balloon coming out of his mouth that said, come over and help us, which, of course, no Native American ever said. One of the very first domestic missions sent out from churches on this soil was undertaken by the now famous Reverend John Eliot. Eliot was called to serve the Puritan church in Roxbury in the year 1631. Among his achievements are the founding of the Roxbury Latin School, serving as one of the editors of the Bay Psalm Book, the first book published on British North American soil, and, less prestigiously, being a part of Anne Hutchinson's excommunication. Eliot believed that the immortal souls of the Massachusetts Indians living around Boston were in danger of perdition because they were not Christian. This sounds problematic to modern, cosmopolitan, open-minded ears like ours, but consider this, at least he thought they had souls. There were many Puritans of the day who believed they didn't, and that they were therefore on the order of animals. Eliot fought against such a notion. He befriended many of these Indians and began to work and sometimes to live among them. He learned their language. Being a good Protestant, he wanted them to be able to read, specifically to read the Bible. The problem was no written form of the Algonquin language existed, so he set to work. He taught his friends the Latin alphabet, and then he devised a system for transliterating their language using that alphabet. And of course, the very first thing he transliterated into Algonquin was the Bible. Several thousand copies of the New Testament were printed in 1661. The Hebrew scriptures followed 2 years later. That Bible came to be known as the Eliot Bible. A first edition copy of this Bible, owned by Old South and dating to 1663, sits here to my right on the chancel. You can read more about it in the bulletin insert prepared by our Old South historian Jeff Macomb, who's also watching it like a hawk from an undisclosed location right now, so don't get any ideas. Eliot came to be known as the Apostle to the Indians, and would later found several towns for Christian Indians designed to protect and preserve their threatened culture. He would also donate land in Jamaica Plain for a school, still in operation today, that he stipulated must admit both Native Americans and African Americans without prejudice, a novel and controversial practice for his day. Eliot may have been primarily about converting people, but he also, in Christian love, poured himself out to make provision for their education, for the protection of their culture, and for their well-being. The next chapter of this story starts not in a church or in the Roxbury Forest, but in a haystack. By 1806, American churches had been doing mission work at home for a long time, but there was no organized foreign mission work. The Second Great Awakening was gaining momentum, and with it, mounting hopes that Christ's return was imminent. One Sunday afternoon, five students from Williams College in western Massachusetts met in a maple grove to pray about this imminent return. A sudden thunderstorm sent them diving into a haystack for shelter, and while they waited out the storm in the haystack, they reflected on what they thought might happen to those who hadn't been converted to Christianity by the time Jesus got back. They thought of all those Buddhists and Muslims and Hindus and others in Asia who had never heard the gospel. And they were worried about them. The Haystack Brethren, as they came to be called, proposed sending the gospel abroad with the intent to evangelize the whole wide world. With the gospel, they planned to send civilization and education and medicine. All five went on to study at Andover Seminary, now Andover Newton Theological School. After graduating, they convinced the churches of Massachusetts and Connecticut to form the American Board of Commissioners for Foreign Missions. The American Board became the official foreign mission arm of the New England Congregational Churches. That's this one. It was the first such body in all the land, and its inception marks the birth of the foreign missions movement in the United States. In 1812, the Haystack Brethren were ordained and commissioned, and then set sail for India. The American Board wanted to evangelize not only the Far East, but the American West as well. It sent missionaries to the Creek and the Choctaw, the Chickasaw, Cherokee, Osage, Maumee, the Iroquois, and more. On the one hand, they brought with them that peculiar package of religion and European culture and disease and alcohol and civilization that would decimate so many native cultures. On the other hand, they built schools and hospitals and homes and churches that today are some of the most tenacious, gritty in a good way, faithful, hard-working, poor churches in the entire denomination. When in 1830 President Andrew Jackson betrayed the Cherokee Nation, ignored a ruling of the Supreme Court, and set in motion the expulsion of the Cherokee from Georgia along what would come to be known as the Trail of Tears, the American Board took the lead, financially and otherwise, in defending the Cherokee sovereignty and fighting against their removal. One of our missionaries brought a case all the way to the Supreme Court on the Cherokee's behalf. Two of the American Board's missionaries were arrested for acts of civil disobedience and sentenced to 4 years of hard labor. The American Board also sent missionaries, 150 of them in all, to evangelize Hawaii. The descendants of some of these missionaries would later play a significant role in undermining the monarchy of Queen Liliuokalani, leading to its 1893 overthrow and that nation's annexation by the United States. 100 years later, in 1993, then President of the United Church of Christ, Paul Sherry, formally apologized to the people of Hawaii for the role that we had played in the history of their islands, and at the same time pledged $3.5 million to be administered by Hawaiian United Church of Christ congregations and a newly formed nonprofit organization. The U.S. government, shortly thereafter, took a page from our book and also offered such an apology, but did not offer financial redress. Today, the churches of the Hawaii Conference are some of our most vibrant and culturally diverse. The American Board of Commissioners for Foreign Missions survives today as the Board of Global Missions, shared by the United Church of Christ and the Christian Church Disciples of Christ. We are still in the missions business. We have almost 100 full-time missionaries and mission associates living abroad in the world, with another 5 global mission interns, of which our own Liz Meyer Bolton was one in her day, and hundreds more involved in mission through regular work trips and visits. The difference is that these days we're not so much about bringing the one truth of Christ to the world as we are about bringing the love of Christ to the world. At the beginning of the 20th century, Christian theologians began talking about what they called the missio Dei, the sending of God. That's Latin for the sending of God. Every one of God's actions, they said, was God sending God's self out into the world, was God pouring God's self out into the world. Jesus Christ, he was God's mission. He was God's sending of God's self into the world. The Christian's mission then, they said, the Christian's sending was not about converting anybody to anything, but simply about participating in God's own sending, that great flow of love and grace into the world. Here's what Jesus did not say happened on the road to Jericho. The Samaritan did not offer to help the Jew on the one condition that he convert to the Samaritan faith. He did what Jesus said his followers should do. He poured himself out to bind up the one who was broken. He gave money for the one who had none. He gave help where he could. He loved God with all his heart. He loved his neighbor as himself. Jesus said, "Do that, and the world itself will be converted into the very realm of God." In a little over a week, a bunch of us will set out from this place as missionaries from Old South, sent and commissioned by you to the Navajo Nation. Before we go, you will commission us. which is to say that you will become co-missionaries with us. We will go there to love God and our neighbors as ourselves. We will help if we can. We will paint things and landscape things and build things. We will try to be heirs to the best that our missionary forebears have done, building, healing, teaching, preserving culture. We will try to be like the Samaritan, like the Winnebagoes that saved Professor Kurtz. We will try to serve as freely, love as readily as they. There will be no conditions placed on our work. But make no mistake, we are going on this trip to convert people. But, and here's the difference between the missionaries we're going to be and the missionaries our forebears sent out. We're not going to try to convert the people we will meet when we get there. We're going to try to convert ourselves. We're going because we want to be converted into disciples of Jesus Christ. We're going so that we can learn to love harder and serve better. We're going so that we can have our eyes opened to see God everywhere. We're going so that we can have our hard hearts broken open to let more love out and more light in. John Eliot sets out to save souls and winds up flying in the face of his own people to build schools and towns and translate books on behalf of his new friends. The American Board sets out to win the world for Christ and instead finds itself fighting tooth and nail on behalf of the Cherokee. Our missionaries go to save Hawaii, end up participating in its overthrow, and then our denomination ends up teaching the American government how to apologize. Professor Kurtz is saved by Winnebago Samaritans and is converted to love and goes to work to build a school that would educate a man that would go on to be a national leader in our church, and the circle remains unbroken. God is sending God's own self out into the world right now, and God will keep pouring God's self out until everyone, everywhere is converted to love. Here's what Jesus said to the lawyer. Don't convert people. Love them and convert yourself. Wish us luck. Amen.